All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from Queens, the borough of Queens in the city of New York. This is the 14th day of September 2021. I do like to remind you I am the author of a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. You can sign up for that by going to miningstocks.com. ChenPicks.com is the place to go to pick up on Chen Lin's excellent letter. Focus is on biotechs and the mining shares, as well as sometimes the energy shares. And then there's Michael Oliver, who's with us today. It's OliverMSA.com for his excellent letter, momentum and structure analysis letter that is very unique. It is one of a kind, and it has been very, very good for us and for me in particular as I try to hold steady with my investments and not get whipped in and out by the emotions of markets. But Michael has really been very helpful to us, and I'm glad to say he'll be with me in just a couple of minutes from now. And, of course, I want to thank all of you for sending along your questions, for listening to this show, and for sending along your thoughts and questions to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions@gmail.com, and our sponsors for this week that make this show possible: Novo Resources, LOO Resources, Hannon Metals, Labrador Gold Corp, Lion One Metals, SK Mining Corp, and Firefox Gold. I've titled today's show, Crescat's Macroeconomic Case for Gold. Michael Oliver, as I said, is with us. Quentin Henning will return, and he'll be with me in the second segment. And then Kevin Smith and Octavio Tavi Costa visit for the first time. They're with Crescat Capital. At a time in Western culture when individuals are told to stop thinking and simply follow orders, Kevin and Tavi have demonstrated that if you want to avoid following the lemons into the sea, using your God-given intelligence can allow you to rise far above the norm. Starting with Kevin and his wife Linda in 1992, the legacy of a highly profitable Crescat Capital began. In 2013, Tavi Costa, it's another individual thinker, joined Crescat, where he has built the company's macroeconomic model. Kevin and Tavi will explain the company's investment philosophy and why their macroeconomic model demands investing in gold exploration companies, and they'll be with us during the second half of today's show. Not surprisingly, the independent thinking of Crescat's team was attracted to the skills of another exceptionally talented, most out-of-the-box thinking geology, perhaps, that I know of anyway, Dr. Quentin Henning. Although he had been advising Crescat regarding their investments in mineral exploration companies, Quentin recently joined Crescat in a formal position as technical advisor. Those of you who listen to this show on a regular basis know that I have an extremely high regard for Dr. Henning, not only for his geological insights and his ability to explain geology to lay folks to help them understand what might otherwise seem ununderstandable, but I also have a very high regard for his integrity. So I believe the addition of Dr. Henning to Crescat's team are a good reason for Crescat's gains in their precious metals hedge fund of 235% from August 1st of 2020 to July 31st of this year, and that took place despite a pretty weak gold share market the last number of months. So congratulations, and we will be learning more from both, from Kevin Smith and Tavi Costa in the second half of today's show. Quentin will be with me as well today during the second segment to talk about SK Mining, and that's a really exciting story, a project that looks to be the spitting image of the SK Creek mine, which is one of Canada's wealthiest, highest grade mines ever. So we'll look forward to hearing from Quentin right after our first commercial break. But right now, I'm really happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is with us again. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Always good to have you. You know, I'm just thinking about it. This is a complete Colorado day. You live in Colorado. Dr. Henning lives in Colorado. And our friends from Crescat live in Colorado. So I guess this is, we should have called this a day for Colorado or something like that. But in any event, it's a state that is, I saw just recently, a state that's considered to be the second most popular state to retire in. After Florida, so I thought that was interesting. Anyway, getting to your to the topic at hand here, in your weekend missive, actually in the Gold, Silver, and Mining Letter, as well as your 360-degree weekend report, both of those were headed with the title Stock Market and Gold. Now, I can't remember you using the same title for both letters in the past anytime. So are you saying that you think we may be very close to a transition? Because you've been talking about this transition in asset classes away from equities towards gold and treasuries for some time. Do you think this is starting to happen now?
Yeah, I think so. If you look at an S&P chart, for example, forget the momentum aspects is what we look at, but even if you just look at a price chart of the S&P, over the last several months, its rise has been what we call a zombie walk. It's just like sleepwalking. It's so incremental that it's almost not real. It doesn't even look like an S&P chart anymore, you know, with some ups and downs and that kind of thing. It's just like there's no downs at all, but there's also the upside is measured in, you know, decimals. And, in one bad day, you could wipe out 3 months of sleepwalking. And we're attempting to do that right now. But so that the slowness in the advance indicates, the buyers are still winning. But somebody is distributing consistently, and we see it more particularly in the leadership of the market, and that still is NASDAQ 100 and Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple, which we're highly focused on. We think the intermediate trend is down. We think it's turned down. Intermediate meaning the kind of thing that could, you know, it's a trading type situation, not for a few days, but probably for a few weeks, maybe a month or two. But the problem is, if you get an intermediate trend decline that goes, you know, several more percent lower, you're going to start to engage or break longer-term momentum trend factors, in which case you might wave goodbye to the top. Now, we're not looking for a March event like last year, you know, where everybody's pulling their hair out and margin calls and they're selling anything and everything. We're looking for a typical top, which is the norm is that you have a fighting situation. Go back and look at the 2000 top. Go back and look at the 2007 top. And you won't see a collapse. You'll see an arm wrestling match, which ultimately goes lower. That's what we think we're headed for. But I think there's a lot of asset managers who appreciate that notion and have been starting to move assets out of stocks, which they perceive to be higher risk, less reward now, after what's gone on for the last dozen years, and moving it into T-bonds just for safety, not because for yield, certainly.
No.
But it's, you know, it's like cash. You move it over to cash. Well, they'll buy T-bonds, 10-year, 30-year, that kind of thing. And they're buying gold. Now, if you go back and look at T-bonds, I don't think ultimately that relationship will hold up. I think T-bonds will ultimately turn down. Yields will go up again. But for now, they're still an alternative to the stock market. Therefore, when you start to see bonds firm, it means somebody's buying them and probably exiting stocks at the same time. But notice when bonds made their low, back in March. When did gold make its low? Back in March. So there's a coincidence there. Admittedly, gold probed back down toward that low in early August with that panic selling in the dark. But it lasted a few minutes, actually. It was a few-minute phenomenon. And gold's now, you know, 1805 today. So that low in March was 1673. But anyway, so the fact that bonds and gold are firming, even if irregularly, to the point where people don't quite get the sense that they're firming, that means money's moving into them and moving out of, I think, stocks. And I think now you're starting to see breakage in stocks that indicates that it's not just slowing the advance in stocks, the selling, but it's actually starting to break them down. We've got specific numbers, and we're focused on what we think we need to focus on, which is to say the leadership. And by leadership, I mean the symbols that constitute, you know, 20-30% of the major indexes. And, and the three I just mentioned are three of them. You could add Google and Facebook.
Sure.
When you have weightings like these symbols have that are so heavy, you can take 100 other stocks and they don't even balance Apple or Amazon or Microsoft in terms of the weighting within the index. So we think if they break, and we think they're now in the intermediate downtrend, we've got levels not far below that they'll break annual momentum uptrends. They go back a dozen years, which means we're in a bear market at that point. And I think at that point, that's when gold and T-bonds will get even more oomph on the upside. We've got some numbers on gold and silver that we adjust down each week or each quarter, depending on which metric we're using, that say, okay, we're coming out of here. By the, coming out of here, I mean coming out of this clump of ink that we've seen for the last 13 months, where gold was, you know, 2,000 down to below 1,700, and now it's sort of in the middle of that. Silver's between like 30 and 22, and now it's sort of in the middle of that. That there are levels that will break out upside that will indicate we're going through the top of those zones. And it won't require price getting back up near the top of those zones. It will require very little. In fact, I'd say just throw out a number, you get up in the upper 25s again on silver, like a buck or so above this week's high, it's coming out of here. In the case of gold, for the rest of this quarter, that means only next 2 weeks, by the way, 1865 will do the job, but you get into next quarter and you see gold up in the 1830s again. If you look at a price chart, we've been pushing up into that zone repeatedly in the last few months. You go back up there one more time and it happens to be in the fourth quarter, you're coming out of here, upside. So anyway, we're on edge here for that upside breakout, which we think is pending. And the question is it going to occur before next quarter, or are we going to fumble around here and work our way to it in October, which is
in the
fourth
quarter. With a minute left here, Michael, how's silver looking to you now?
I still like silver over gold, and I like what silver's been doing. Unlike gold, silver never took out. You know, gold made a low back in November in the 1700s and then blew it out in March. Silver never did that. Silver made its first pullback low in September of last year, 6 weeks after the high. It had been up to 30 almost and dropped to 2190-something 6 weeks after the high. You've never come back and taken out that low. You've been between that high and that low ever since. And right now we're, you know, 24-something. So it's a confusing price-looking situation because you, when you look at the price chart, you think, well, gee, silver's got to go up to 30 again before it breaks out. No, it doesn't. We think at upper 25 will do the job.
All right. Silver bigger on the upside and
bigger on the upside percent-wise than gold, yes.
And bigger on
and
the downside.
Also, the miners, which everybody is so frustrated by.
Yes, we sure are.
They'll suddenly become stronger than gold.
They'll lead gold up, you think?
I think once you get gold and silver through our numbers, that the miners will suddenly engage in a way that percent-wise will drop yours. They'll regain leadership again quickly. Well, yesterday was a good example. Silver was down a bit, gold up a bit, and the miners are up 3% or so.
Yeah, no, that's true. The major miners,
yeah.
Very good. Well, 30 seconds left. Just a real quick one on uranium. I mean, uranium is breaking out. I mean, it has broken out, right?
We've been bullish for a couple of years, and we've crossed over some major numbers. I think you're going to go above 44, which is a price high it made several years ago. Not the highest high, but a prominent price high. I don't think it's going to stop until you blow that out. But I'll tell you what I like the most. It's natural gas.
Really?
I think natural gas, which is, we had multiple breakouts on it, and our final one was around 440. It's now 530. We think it's going to $9 and probably quickly.
Well, I guess if
and we think it's going to occur during the winter here, which, of course, makes sense. But that is not good news for folks to get a doubling in their heating bill.
Yeah, inflation is on the rise, no doubt about that. Yeah, and that and can't be good. That can't be good
for monetary policy. This is government energy policy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I guess maybe real deep down inside, AOC is bullish on natural gas, and she wants to make a lot of money. Maybe she's long gas, natural gas.
She
who knows?
Probably is.
Yeah, who knows? Let's stay away from politics. It's so ridiculous, so nonsensical. So let's just stick to the numbers, and that's what you do with your momentum and structure analysis. Michael, thank you so much for being with us. Again, it's always a pleasure to have you. All righty, folks, so we do have to go to break, but don't go away. Dr. Quentin Henning will be with us to talk about SK Mining. It's a really exciting story, so don't go away. We'll be right back with Quentin Henning.
Firefox Gold is actively exploring in Finland, where recent discoveries have sparked a new gold rush. Firefox controls a major portion of a prospective gold belt, giving the company a distinct advantage for exploration and strategic partnerships. The company's strong international leadership team, combined with its Finland-based exploration specialists, will put Firefox on the crest of the coming wave of gold discoveries. Firefox Gold trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol FFOX. Go to firefoxgold.com to subscribe for updates.
SK Mining Corp., trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQB, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.